Welcome, everybody, to the Weekend Gardener on WPTF. Mike Raley here. We are in Durham at a very, very special place. One of the older libraries around. I guess the oldest library in Durham. Is this the oldest, Carter Q?
It's not the oldest.
It's not the oldest.
Not the oldest.
It's been renovated.
It's been renovated, yes.
But what's the oldest, then?
Well, the oldest would have been the main library.
And, okay.
Yep, that would have been the oldest. Stanford Warren started in 1913 in the basement of the White Rock Baptist Church. And by 1916, we had moved down to the corner of Fayetteville and Pettigrew. And we started out as the Durham Color Library.
Well, it's and physicians who are quite often leaders in a community, as they should be, and help start this branch.
Yes. So in 1913, Dr. Aaron McDuffie Moore started this library really in the basement. It was a reading room that was in the basement of White Rock Church. And then, of course, John Merrick, who was one of the founders of Mechanics Farmers Bank, North Carolina Mutual Insurance Company, and also Dr. Moore, also was one of those early founders. And so they recognized the need to have library services for African Americans at that time. And so they moved to the corner of Fayetteville and Pettigrew. We moved to this building, this structure, in 1940. And that is why it is named after Stanford L. Warren, Stanford Lee Warren, because he also was the second medical doctor here, but he also donated the money for the land for this structure.
How about that? Well, we're honored to be here today, and we have quite a few guests that have come by, and we're so honored to have Senator Mike Warren with us. And Senator, you know a lot about Durham and the county of Durham and this area and its great history. And you were talking off the air about gardening, and there are plenty of gardeners around, too.
Oh, absolutely. And it's great being here in the historic Stanford L. Warren Library. And our folks done such an amazing job renovating this place and updating it, but maintaining the architecture. And we were talking earlier about how so many famous writers and academics lived here because of the proximity to North Carolina Central University. Dr. John Hope Franklin did much of the research and writing for some of his early seminal works in this building.
Yeah.
And so, but as it relates to gardening, we were talking about Durham's history of having urban gardens. We've always in this community respected urban gardens and had them growing here. So I can take you all just a few blocks here of Stanford L. Warren Library and just show you some great gardens. Yards, churches have done
for some reason we're having trouble with that. Jeff, you want to maybe we can switch?
Go ahead, keep talking.
But yeah, urban gardening has been always been a big thing in Durham. So,
let me go ahead
and give you that, that'll make more sense.
So urban gardening has always had a prominent place in Durham and Durham's history.
Fantastic. And there is a there's a lot of history in this part of Durham generally, and I know that
you're in the old historic Hayti neighborhood, which was a center of black culture, business, and just a great neighborhood. Over the years, so many of the folks have done a great job keeping Hayti alive. And Stanford L. Warren was always one of the anchors of the Hayti community. Children came here, as I mentioned, so many of the professors and academics from North Carolina Central would do research and write in here. So this has been one of the anchors of the Hayti community. And we're watching Hayti's rebirth now with a lot of development and the reopening of this great library. Carter and his colleagues have done such a great job.
Fantastic. Now, do you and your wife garden any, or do you have time?
We don't have time, I am sorry to say.
I don't really have time, and I do a gardening show. So I understand.
We live vicariously through you and Rufus, and all of Rufus's efforts on gardening.
Yeah, so. He certainly does a lot of gardening. Now, you have worked, been associated with Rufus to a certain extent over the years.
Don't ask him to claim it.
Here, we'll give you that.
I say, don't ask him to claim it.
Well, I'm sure.
I met him when he first ran for Attorney General. We were in Ray McCain's dining room in Wilson. Oh. You came to when you were running for Attorney General.
Wow.
We were both much younger than Rufus. So
1974.
Betty McCain. My goodness.
I remember it well.
And Dr. John McCain.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Well, that's like good memories. You, Senator, did you live in Wilson?
I grew up in Wilson.
You grew
absolutely.
Up? Oh, okay. Oh, Parker's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Parker's, Dick's Hot Dogs. I mean, I can go on and on for the food in Wilson.
Just, so, the big thing. Y'all were talking off the air about
Mitchell's was the other great barbecue place.
A great fan of the Weekend Gardener, Colonel Dewey Sheffield.
Oh, my gosh.
His father was an agriculture extension agent.
Oh, wow. How about that? I don't believe. I know the name, of course. And you were in radio.
I did. I started
one of the sad few people who get into radio.
To stay in it, I guess.
Yeah. No, you were. That was smart.
That's right.
That was a smart thing to get out of it.
In high school, I worked at WGTM.
Yeah, man.
AM 590 in Wilson.
Now, was that the Hartwell Campbell station?
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Was.
And Tom Campbell.
And then, worked at the Duke, helped found the Duke radio station when I was in college, and then went over to
QDR.
The old WQDR back in the Durham Life days, and we were down there on South Saunders Street.
Salisbury. I did a little QDR work in the old format in the 70s, but and then with the country too. So we're so honored to have you with us this morning. I'm glad you stopped by.
Carter and I say we're just delighted you all came over to Durham today and brought your great show.
We're
help us recognize the Stanford L. Warren Library and be here in the Bull City today.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. All right, Brother Rufus.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with Mike and Carter Q, one of the finest listeners we've ever had. And the thing about Carter is that he knows a lot about gardening.
He does.
So he might fool people into thinking he's sort of a little
squirrely librarian. Well, librarians know about everything, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if they know everything. I definitely know I don't know everything, but I can go find out. I can go to a dictionary. Well, they don't use real dictionaries anymore in the paper, but I do, though. I have a paper dictionary.
Yeah.
That's thesaurus.
That's right. They're heavy, and all. I like them. But they had a seminar, a series, gardening workshops and stuff here.
We actually the
somewhere in this area.
Yes, down at the main library primarily. They have a gardening club. Megan Kozlowski.
Didn't you do something last summer?
We did. We had and we're getting ready now, 2025, for the African American Legacy in Gardening and Horticulture Symposium. And that will take place March the 28th and March the 29th. March 28th, we're going to be showing a film at 6 p.m. at the Hayti Center. That film is called Family Tree, that looks at urban tree farmers, African-American urban tree farmers. And on the 29th, we're going to have a full day of events. We're going to have seed swap, tree giveaway. We have provide free lunch for everyone, but we're going to have three exciting symposiums. And as a matter of fact, we have one of our moderators for one of the symposiums here at the table, Zelda Lockhart, who is a local author. So glad to have Zelda here.
Yeah, we want to talk to Zelda. Is this a fundraiser?
No, it's not. This is a part of our educational. We just believe that to educate, to enlighten, and enhance everyone's knowledge relative to history, gardening, horticulture, agriculture, but just to make people a little more enlightened than what they otherwise might get from TikTok or YouTube.
My grandsons adore the library. It's always an adventure. And there's so many interactive things at libraries now for children. There's so much stimulation, not just reading, but it helps to I guess, hone their reading skills and their interest in reading, but they just love it. So they go with their grandmother and their parents now. They insist on it. And when my older grandson got into first grade this year, that was the first thing he looked for in school was the library.
Oh, wow.
So it's made a great mark. And do we have another mic,
yes,
Jeff?
Yes, she's got one. Yeah.
Oh, if you got one.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Lockhart, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
Authors. Rufus has written a book, and he talked about the strain of having to go through that. I admire people who can sit, who are disciplined, who can sit and write.
Well, people often say, well, you ought to write a book. Well, that's easy said, because my problem, Zelda, was I wrote a book about political life and Watergate. Was what not to put in it. Now, you probably didn't have that problem. Mine was, do not tell stories on people that will make them look bad. And I had some good stories that I just couldn't put in there. And so I'm trying to figure out a way to do this sometime. With stories like on my friend and
but I hadn't
Bob,
figured out, Rufus, why it was so hard for you.
Jim Graham.
You were writing about your favorite subject, which was you.
I didn't want to say that, but...
it's easier to talk about yourself. And I admire people that write books because it's hard to do. And not everybody's going to be a bestseller.
Now, do you not agree? Is it easy?
It's nothing you go to do is easy, but if you're passionate about what you're doing, and I go by Dr. Lockhart, by the way, so Miss Lockhart is someone else, I think my niece. So I feel like writing and gardening almost go hand in hand. Like there's something about the process of putting something from seed in the ground and the amount of work, but nurturing, but the beauty of the concentration and what you get back from the process that is involved in gardening is the same as what's involved in writing a full manuscript. So,
amen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very well put.
Tell us about some of your works.
Yeah, so I have four novels, two memoirs, and then I also have a book that walks people through the emotional, psychological, and spiritual process of actually writing a book, which is much like gardening.
I need to read that.
Yeah, that's the soul of the full-length manuscript. And then I have the four novels. They all really focus on the ways in which families can have healing through telling their stories, if they tell the truth. You were asking a moment ago about, what to leave out. And hey, it all has to go. It's all the truth. So as long as it is part of the trajectory of the story, from wounding to healing, whatever that trajectory is, that needs to be in the story. Because if we just tell the good stuff, then people, when they go to heal, they don't know what they're healing from. You know, that would be like having a garden and deciding that the bees couldn't be present. you know, are having a garden and deciding that the soil couldn't be present.
Well, you're giving me more courage now, more courage.
Well, you are considering another.
Well, I'd be interested to know what Dr. Lockhart thinks about this. I want to write a book on civility in these days of when people are on others' throats, using the examples of the past that Mike remembers, my great boss, Senator Sam Ervin, during Watergate, and times when people got along. And I want to use examples, too, of what I call my super kids, where we've taken 80 kids over 31 years who've done some remarkable things to show resiliency and giving back. So the whole theme will be showing there can be civility. Do you think there's any sort of a craving for that?
I think there's a craving for that, and I also think that we, you know, in considering ourselves and allowing ourselves to be creatures of the planet, like we belong to the ecology. And so in that ecology, when you think about gardening, there are companion plants, and then there are plants that are enemies of each other.
Absolutely.
They would not grow well together. So I think sometimes it's also important that the more that we recognize that that there's some things that don't sit well together, and then that's part of the harmony, is admitting that. I think what we need to get away from is violence. You know, because when you think about racism, homophobia, sexism, though, that's violence as opposed to just recognition of what does not sit side by side well together to grow together. So I think that civility, we should break it down, you know, into its different ways of looking at what needs to be and then what needs to be healed. So, yeah, and gardening makes great metaphors.
So much a part. So much part of my first book is called That's Rufus. Mm-hmm. The gardening was my touch with sanity.
Mm-hmm. Have you reached that yet?
No. No one ever gets that perfect to have pure sanity.
We're in Raleigh. No, we're not. We're in Durham. Where are we? We're in Durham. We're at the library.
I'm like 10 minutes from my apartment, Mike.
Yeah, about 10 minutes from your apartment. Okay. Well, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF. With the WPTF Weekend Garden. We're in Durham, not Raleigh. We're in Durham. I'm used to being in Raleigh. I like Durham a lot. But we're joined by Senator Mike Woodard and Carter Q, one of our favorite listeners, and also Dr. Zelda Lockhart. And Dr. Lockhart, your book, Trinity, when I think of Trinity, I think of Father, Son, religion, God. And tell us about this book.
We have
a couple of minutes.
I'll tell you quickly. I know the pitch.
You know what's going on.
This book follows three generations of African American men who are trying to transmute the violence out of their lives that has been transmuted in through colonization and slavery. And it's told through a female spirit who is trying to come through the story the entire time. And her entrance is blocked by that violence. And she comes through. And then she, you know, lives the life of helping the family to be able to heal, you know, making sure that their stories are told through to fruition, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and that they return themselves home to the land.
It's wonderful. And what, got about a minute, I guess, what do you have coming up? I'm sure you've got all kinds of ideas.
Yeah, so I have a book that I have written that tells my story of my familial and social pains and troubles that I have had that are due to colonization, and the ways in my life that I have been able to overcome some of those difficulties using things like gardening and other what I call ceremonies. And then I also have a novel that I'm working on that tells the story of an ethnobotanist who travels back to the South and finds out that some of the seed-bearing women in her family carry a particular gene. And yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's an honor to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. We we got 30 seconds. I'm sold. That's what Joel says goes. So we'll be back. Carter Q, tell everybody where we are.
We are at the historic Stanford L. Warren Branch Library here in Durham, North Carolina.
Amen. All right. We'll be here if we can keep Rufus here.
Well, I feel like I'm being educated.
We are being educated.
Find
we need
people.
To be educated. We'll be back here on WPTF. It's 8:33. Mike Rayleigh here. We're at the Stanford L. Warren Branch Library in Durham on Fayetteville Street. And so this branch is about 100 years old, 102 years old, something like that?
Well, not this particular, the organization of the origins of Stanford Warren, we go back to about 1913.
Yeah.
But this particular structure, we moved in 1940.
Oh, okay. Yeah. How about that? Wow. It's this beautiful renovation here, and I'm sure a very popular place for this community.
Oh, yes. I remember I came here as a child in the 70s, early 70s, and it was a destination. At that time, I recall coming to the down to the basement, and they had we show a film. Of course, they had a film projector. I don't think too many people remember film projectors, but we had a film projector.
Yeah.
And they show films. And, of course, the children's area was downstairs. And you had to graduate to coming upstairs to the adult section. And I was finally able to graduate to leave from the kids area to come up and get one of my first books that dealt with Native American folklore. That's what I was into when I was in the second grade. So,
how about that?
In Greek mythology.
Rufus, they didn't have projectors in your day, did they?
Oh, and the film always went wrong. Somebody made that a few little...
Were you the guy in school who ran the projector?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay,
I did. I laughed at the guy.
I was just...
with the broken tape. I even remember when you had the movie theater up in Boone. Once in a while, the projector would go wrong. You know, you'd hear all this noise up in the little room, about 3x3x3,
yeah,
like a gorilla was on the loose.
Yeah.
And the film had broken. Eh. So, long days. Speaking of that right now, why don't we do this? The Cliff Joyner saying of the...
There's a little ceremony we do.
It's apropos. We are stuck with technology when what we really want is just things that work.
Yeah. And, yeah, just make things simple.
Yeah.
Oh,
make things
that would
simple.
Be so nice.
And by the way, Brother Mike Woodard, former senator, I've often wondered, I know what I did on my many steps as a recovering politician. and by the way, Doctor, I'm about, out of 100 steps, I'm maybe 75.
Yeah.
It's a long journey.
Yeah.
What are you doing to yourself, my dear friend?
Oh, well, I'm... thank you for asking. When I retired from the General Assembly a couple months ago, I started teaching a class in the OLLI program at Duke. And I cleverly titled the class Red, Purple, and Blue, The Confounding Nature of North Carolina Politics.
Oh, wow. It is a strange world we live in North Carolina. And it's always been this way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I actually started, Mike... reached out to a couple of the political scientists that I enjoy their work and rely on them. And we actually started with Governor Tryon and wanted to go back to colonial times because so much of North Carolina's history defines what North Carolina politics is like today. And so we start right there with Governor Tryon. And as I was telling Rufus, we just turned the corner to the 20th century this week's class. And so anyway, we were, the timing was great because we talked about the Wilmington coup of 1898, an important part of North Carolina's history, difficult part, but an important part.
Yeah.
And came just in time to talk about the legacy of the Raleigh News Observer and Josephus Daniels, his son Jonathan, and just in time for Rob Christensen's.
Our minds were on the same track. I was going to ask if you had had Rob Christensen in to speak to your class.
I have not, but I helped Rob sell a lot of books. My class has bought some books.
About the News Observer. He's written a book
Rob's
about the
book
News
just
Observer.
Has just now come out from I guess, UNC Press, and is doing his book launch this week with a couple of appearances in the Triangle area.
So, and, of course, about the Scott family.
It's our march through history. We're a couple of classes away from Governor Carr Scott and the Branch Head Boys.
Yeah.
And that'll be a fun, good lecture.
We started the Chitlin Club.
You need to refer to Mike and me when you come to that section about the Chitlin Club of North Carolina, because that was an integral part of Scott, because he's tired of all those fancy things in Raleigh. He wanted something for the common man.
Yeah.
So he started the Chitlin Club, which still exists today. And as far as
forgive us, doctor.
I'm giving the doctor's
we get driving off the road here.
You have three members of the Chitlin Club sitting right here with you.
Right. So. Right.
And you have to like chitlins. Do you like chitlins?
Absolutely not.
Okay, all right. Fair.
I'm vegan because I had to grow up sort of cleaning them, as they say.
Okay. But you know what we're talking about.
She sure does.
I don't know about that. Well, Governor Scott was an interesting guy anyway, and certainly his son.
Well, you mentioned Governor Tryon. I think that would be a good study for most people to understand why our legislature is so pronounced in government in North Carolina, and has been. They hated the royal governors, and he was one of the most hated, I take it, Mike. Is that your assessment?
That is exactly the first lesson we learned in the first class, is why North Carolina traditionally has had a weak governor and a strong legislature goes back to Tryon.
All right, more from the Stanford L. Warren Library in Durham coming up on the WPTF Weekend Gardener. All right, what time is it? It's 8:43. Wow, we're zipping through an hour here. Feels like we just got here, Rufus.
Well, so many,
we're blacking out, are we?
So many interesting people.
I know. We're so honored to have our guests.
Yeah, what I want to know is, any of you who are gardeners, what do you got blooming now?
Well, you know, what I need to ask you, Rufus, I have my Rose of Sharon. I should have pruned them back by now. And is it? Should I wait? Or?
Well, no, leave it alone right now. You're getting very close to cutting off the buds.
Be true for a lot of the things that are going to bloom.
If you do
spring.
It in the next 2 weeks, you're okay.
Okay. Well, and also I have a very interesting Ming's Treasure iris. Probably grows about five feet by 5 feet, and
iris.
It's an iris, yeah.
5 feet.
It will grow to be about five by five.
You got me on that one.
That's a hoss.
I'm drawing a blank on that.
Wow. Yeah, it's a new cultivar. It's Emperor Ming's iris.
Is it akin to a regular bearded iris?
I don't think so.
Because not the way you describe it. Because I can't imagine anything like that.
I mean,
that.
Is it more of a shrub?
No. No,
it is
an iris.
Has a bloom like an iris?
Has a bloom like an iris.
I'm afraid that thing would eat me or something. Well, that sounds pretty
big. We need help from the audience on that.
I know. Somebody from the Iris Society maybe is listening. I will have to look that one up.
So what's its habit of blooming when and where?
Well, it will bloom this spring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a tuber? Comes from a tuber?
It was, yes. Yeah.
Gracious goodness. It must have a lot of limbs sticking out of it.
Oh, it is. It's you know, because of the cold and the rain, you know, it's kind of flopping over. And I had planned to cut it back a bit earlier.
Stake it.
Yeah.
Mike, you got anything blooming?
I don't have a thing blooming but the weeds in my yard, so...
There's one, a cure thing for that. Cut them down. If they're green, cut them down.
There you go, Rufus.
Wow,
look at
that's
that
a beauty.
Yeah, let me.
Well, that makes
a little
sense.
Bit bigger, bigger photo.
Well, you got a bigger clump there than I envisioned.
That is tremendous.
Isn't that beautiful?
You need that, Rufus.
That
you need
is
to find
just gorgeous.
Some of that. The Okami cherries are starting to bloom now. About 3 weeks ago, I thought they were blooming. then. They usually start blooming because we had such warm Februarys. But they were the flowering apricots that were still blooming then. But the Okami cherries are starting to bloom. Right. They're really coming out now all over the place. You don't have an Okami cherry.
No, I don't. I noticed
that's the first to bloom.
My quince, I'm a great quince guy. I got white, salmon, and pink. You're obviously a gardener, doctor, because you write about it a lot.
Yeah, I'm learning how to flower garden. I've had been doing food gardening for almost 20 years, and I'm still doing some of that now that I've moved to town. But yeah, so the paper bush.
Edgeworthia.
It's so...
Isn't it extraordinary?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That started blooming almost a month ago.
Seems like, now. Yeah, they just yeah. They tease you.
Yeah, and they
and Daphnes
smell
are blooming.
So good. Yeah,
you have
absolutely.
Daphne, winter Daphne?
Yeah.
Rufus has killed a lot of those. I don't know why.
You know, you're not supposed to talk to them, look at them, do anything. They die on you, but yeah. I have four that are survivors.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, they are blooming now, so
well, the Edgeworthia, I call it the chandelier plant, a little dangles down there.
And I
took a good whiff this morning about 6:30, and the Daphnes were almost opened up. I didn't linger long.
It didn't make you sneeze or anything?
No,
I took a big sniff.
I didn't want to irritate them.
Well, I don't want you.
They
to
don't like wet feet either.
Yeah, nobody likes wet feet except for a. Well, those cypress or something.
Those irises might a little bit there.
They might. I don't know. I really like those. So you got to have a lot of sun, I guess.
Well, Doc, what's your favorite tomato since you were a food gardener?
Cherry tomatoes are my favorite.
They're the easiest to grow,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they're the easiest to grow, and they taste like the sun to me, and they remind me of childhood because my mom would grow them, and I would just walk out and just eat them, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the sun gold is probably the easiest.
Oh, absolutely.
That really should have some sun in it. But there are a lot of smaller tomatoes that are much easier to grow than can we.
Yeah. Even if you think you're going to be a failure at growing tomatoes, you can't go wrong with a cherry tomato.
They will come through. Mm-hmm. Put some in a bowl and, you know, instead of eating candy, eat those.
Well, Doc, a lot of people like Mike and others have buildings named for them and this and that. I have tomatoes named after me and a hot dog at the State Farmer's Market.
The Rufus dog.
The Rufus dog.
But I'm proud Dr. Huye has named a couple tomatoes, Rufus tomatoes, and I'm not quite knowledgeable yet of what they exactly going to be because they're in trial right now. I've always been on trial.
That's not a good thing.
I guess there won't be a Watergate tomato then.
It's an idea.
Hey, good idea.
What would that look like?
Yeah. Good idea, Carter.
What characteristics would a Watergate tomato have?
I will discuss that with as we call the mountains, Gerald
Adams.
Gerald Arnold up in the mountains, he'd be Gerald.
And
Cheryl. My secretary is Cheryl.
Do you like daylilies?
I do.
Yeah, we have a proud member of the Hemericallis Society who grows hundreds of daylilies on the line with us. Steve?
Oh, Steve, yes.
Steve, good morning.
Yeah, I hear him.
Okay, hey, that's good. Go ahead and talk.
Yeah, I actually did some gardening yesterday.
Well, good for you. I did, too. I did some little trimming here and there.
Yeah, I cut back my liriope and dug up a red hot poker. Yeah, we needed some room to move some daylilies. And
are you sharing those plants with anybody, or are you just going to throw them away?
No, that's why I wanted to call. I want to let anybody that's listening, if they want a healthy clump of red hot poker, they're welcome to come by and pick it up. They're free. They can just, I got them in a wagon at the end of the driveway like I did with the rain lilies a couple of years back. But they're welcome to come and get them. They can find my address at the on the website at the oh God, I'm having a hard time talking this morning, which is weird.
I have that trouble every time, and I'm paid to do that, so don't feel bad.
It's frustrating, but at the Daylily website, the Raleigh Daylily Club, if you go in there, there's a tab called Display Gardens, and my garden is listed in that as the...
Just one more?
Just one more. Daylily Garden, and they're welcome to come by and grab a clump. Okay. And also, I want to remind everybody that tomorrow is our first Daylily Club meeting at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum, and we're going to have Charles and Heidi Douglas from South Carolina coming up, and they have some really enormous, beautiful daylilies. And they always have an entertaining show.
And they share, too, don't they? Aren't they bringing
they
some to share?
They'll have some for auction. We'll have a plant auction sometime during the the program. It's at 2 o'clock at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum. Heidi is very entertaining, and the pictures they take of their daylilies is just absolutely gorgeous. So it's worth coming to. But like I said, if anybody wants a clump of red hot poker, they're welcome to come and get it. The wagon's at the end of my driveway.
Well, that's a nice, thoughtful thing to do, Steve. And yeah, we appreciate you sharing.
Y'all are in Durham, so it's a long way for us to go.
That's okay. That's
all right. Beautiful place over here.
It sure is. We're so glad to be here.
Steve,
guys are very entertaining this morning. So,
Thank you.
Steve, it's a little late to be dividing daylilies, right?
I'm going to be moving daylilies, that's for sure. And if you've got a big enough clump, you can always share. But but the real thing to do right now is to start dressing them, to get the old scapes, the dead scapes, the foliage, and clean up around them, give them some breathing room, and give them a bit of food, just a little bit of fertilizer.
So what kind? I was something in low nitrogen.
I used 10-10, just straight 10-10-10.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And some cow manure. Cow manure is always a good backup.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I'll let you
Thank
guys
you, Steve.
Keep listening to you.
Appreciate it, buddy. Bye-bye.
Yeah, love you guys. Have a good day.
We love you, too. All right. Take care. Yeah. Daylilies. That's always a great thing to have if you have some sunlight. And they will serve you well. Do you have any daylilies, Carter?
No, we used to call them ditch lilies, I think.
Ditch lilies? Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Well, you'll see them.
Oh, yeah.
Native.
Yeah, down in South
varieties.
Carolina, you going down the road, you look over the side of the road, and you see, they call, and I say, well, what are those? They say, oh, those are ditch lilies.
Yeah. Yep. And then, I can remember vividly going to the mountains and seeing later in the year, in August, September, Joe Pieweed in the ditches.
Oh, yes.
Up toward the mountains. Did your mama have any Joe Pieweed?
Oh, absolutely, and I've got one, too. Ditch lilies, you want one color, orange.
And the state has done such a great job in planting in the medians on 40 and 85 and so forth. They utilize a lot of the daylilies. And,
well, right. Speaking of... of the garden as a metaphor for life, it's like diversity in human beings. You mentioned a moment ago, Doctor, about some plants like one another and some plants don't. But the one thing about nature is you can paint a painting and the colors may look just horribly awful. But in nature, I've never found them to clash.
Isn't that something?
Yes.
Yeah.
No clashing in nature.
That's right. That's right, because it's not the paintings are a replica of nature, and so there's that soul that's in the natural thing that you can't often get from paint.
Yeah. You can't get it, right. But no miscoloring or mismatches in nature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Never found it.
You're a deep thinker, Rufus.
Well,
oh, it's deep in here. I'll agree with that. Whether there's any thinking going on, I don't know.
You're on the right track.
But it's
Senator,
deep,
right?
Yeah. It's deep.
Well, Steve just mentioned a certain kind of manure.
Well, listen, I have another.
I didn't touch that one.
It always comes back to that, doesn't it?
I have another gardening metaphor for you. As we've been sitting here in the Stanford L. Warren Library, and I'm looking around at the books, I was thinking about how the library is a garden. The books are the plants, and the librarians are the pollinators.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know you were a pollinator?
I did not know I was a pollinator. I was trying to be a butterfly.
Well, that's a pollinator.
Yeah. I know.
Butterflies
yeah,
are pollinators.
Yeah, absolutely.
The best pollinator of all is a butterfly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about that? Well, that's wonderful, Doctor. I like
that.
That's
why she's got books that mean something.
All right. Well, how many seconds, Joel? 30 seconds, okay. Yeah, people talking to me. I got voices in my head as it is.
Yeah. Thou seems like a flower so pure and sweet and fair, but each time I touch your hair, I implore God to keep you young and pure and sweet and fair.
Oh, the bard of the yard.
He is that. All right, we've gone through an hour, a couple of more to go from the Stanford L. Warren Library, the branch library here in Durham on Fayetteville Street. We shall return.